I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome to another one of our Urbanite Radio stories. In this issue of The Urbanite, there was an article by Rebecca Messner about Druid Hill Park and the parks in the city. And we have a very special program coming up during the course of this hour. We'll begin by talking with Andrade, who I'll introduce you in a moment. And then we're going to let you hear a really phenomenal interview we did a couple of years back with the people who actually sat in, tried to play tennis in 1948 to integrate the tennis courts in Druid Hill Park, a very famous event that was almost 62 years ago in the next week or two, July 11th, I think it took place. Before we get there, we're going to introduce you to Andrade, who works for Rec and Parks, but she's also the director of Tree Baltimore. And she and Eden Ungerbautich wrote this wonderful book, Druid Hill Park, Heart of Historic Baltimore. And welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming into our studios today in Hamden. It's good to have you. I was rereading the book myself this morning.
Me too.
knowing that you were going to come here today.
Yes.
And Eden couldn't come in because she's living in Cairo. But but it's amazing. This is Druid Hill Park is the third oldest park in the United States of America.
Of its kind.
Of its kind.
Which is an English country landscaped park.
1860.
1860. Central Park being the oldest and Fairmount in Philadelphia, number two.
Pretty amazing.
It's awesome. Yeah. It was Mayor Swan, who was the mayor of Baltimore at the time, really got this idea to do something about creating a large park. And there was a movement starting around the country, the American Parks Movement. But Swan really pushed it. We had some squares. Mount Vernon Square was there and a few other squares were around. But they wanted to have a space that was, you know, had some woods in it, some rolling hills, a space where you could get away from the ills of the city.
The ills of the city, which were further south.
North Avenue was the city line right at the time.
So you had to travel a bit to get to Druid Hill Park.
You did. You did. And there were some, had some streetcars or some trolleys.
Horse-drawn trolleys back in those
trolleys
days.
Originally. Right. And Swan had this unique idea was to take a 20% of the revenue from the horse-drawn trolleys and put it towards the purchase of a park, and then later used it to build up all the sculptures and statues and put in the reservoirs and everything in the park. So we had a lot of money. We had a revenue stream at that time.
No pun intended. It was right next to a stream, but in Druid Hill Park, which when actually the Jones Falls was actually a river that wasn't paved over.
Yeah, right. It wasn't a highway.
It wasn't a highway. And also the interesting part, the early part of the book, which I found interesting, was this is actually the land of Susquehanna Indians who lived by the river. That was a prime location to live.
Yep.
By the falls.
The Susquehannocks. And there's an area right in front of the zoo. There's now a pavilion, which was built in the early 1860s. And it's the original. And it's called Council Pavilion. And that's supposedly the Susquehannocks held council under a great grove of trees there.
Ah.
So that's kind of the one thing we found out about them in researching the book.
That's very interesting. So now, here was a park that was founded on the eve of the Civil War. And we're celebrating the 150th anniversary of the park this year.
Right.
And you're a big part of that.
Well, I am a part of it.
You're
the Friends
part
of Druid Hill are the leaders of that celebration in October.
You know, it's interesting, that park, I think because of matters of race, I've had this discussion numerous times in my show over the last 17 years, where people always, you know, will look to Patterson Park, or they'll look to Robert E. Lee Park and say how it's always used and nobody uses Druid Hill. But Druid Hill's used all the time.
Yeah, it's very well used.
If it's not used by white people, then it's not being used.
That's right. You got it. You got it.
You know?
I mean, the pavilions are booked by February
right
for every weekend in the summer, you know. So they're completely booked. And the fields, all the ball fields, you know, baseball, football, basketball, the swimming pool, those are packed all the time.
Right.
Now, there are new users, and there are some more white users coming in. We built the Jones Falls Trail there 2 years ago.
Which is phenomenal.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, talk a bit about that Jones Falls Trail.
Well, we just, in 08, we completed the phase through Druid Hill. It's almost 3 miles winding from the front of the park all the way around the reservoir, past the conservatory, past the zoo, and into the backwoods. The backwoods have kind of been cut off for years once the zoo fence went up in 1970.
Right.
And now it's open. If anybody's ridden on that or walked on that or jogged on that trail, it's awesome in the back. You're in the middle of 135 acres of native forest in Baltimore.
Amazing.
On this trail that leads right out to Clipper Mill, to this, you know, which the trail goes right along through Clipper Mill
right,
also.
Goes over here.
Right. Right. Exactly. Right. So that's
over here because we're in Hamden up by Falls Road in our studios. But go ahead.
And that's brought in a lot of new people. And once we're also working on doing the leg of the trail from the Inner Harbor to Penn Station and then from Clipper Mill to Silburn Arboretum. So once those two legs are completed, so you'll be able to ride your bike from the Inner Harbor at the Visitor Center to Silburn. And so you'll have a lot of destination points. So it'll even be much more crowded, many more people using those trails. Now is the time to use it because it's not that crowded.
Right.
But I think, you know, it's going to be in the next few years.
So tell me what I'm curious a couple of things. Just talk about these events that are coming up to celebrate the 150th anniversary of the Druid Hill Park.
Well, the Friends are – there's a very strong Friends group. And if anybody is interested in joining, they're always looking for more people and they're looking for help in organizing the event. But they have a lecture series in October talking about the history of the park, a history of the family. There was two families who owned the property that is now the park. They owned it for 150 years before it became City Park. So there's somebody talking about that history. And there's somebody talking about the Jewish history and the African-American history. So there's lectures. And then on Friday, October 15th, there's going to be a tree dedication. They're planning to plant 150 trees for the 150th anniversary. And they're looking for donations for those trees and the maintenance of those trees. And then Friday night, there's going to be a gala at the Mansion House, which was the only original building from before we purchased the park.
I mean, the old Zoo Mansion House.
Yeah, it's the zoo headquarters, right. But it was the original family house dating from 1801.
Gotcha.
So there'll be a gala there with people dressed in 1860s ball attire.
Can I come as John Brown?
Come as you will. but they're going to – there's the choreography antique of Goucher College is going to be in ball attire, and they're going to be doing dances popular during the Civil War, some of which were danced at Abraham Lincoln's inaugural ball, and even one of which was performed at Barack Obama's ball.
What's the date of this again?
This is Friday, October 15th in the evening. And there'll be food and beverages, and the zoo is going to have some people with animals walking around, and a lot of people in old dress. So it should be really fun. And then the next day in the park is the marathon runs through the park. It's marathon weekend. So the Friends will be out then. And then in the afternoon they're hosting an outdoor festival with interactive sports clinics, demonstrations, foods, exhibits, walking and biking tours through the park. So it's going to be a whole day of all kinds of things happening throughout the entire park.
That sounds like a guess. I love the ball idea. Sounds great.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, you're invited.
Good. I definitely want to come to that one. talk about what plans are that we have made for the park. You know, we made, again, as I said earlier, there was a huge effort to, once they started gentrifying Patterson Park, to kind of bring Patterson Park back. But Druid Hill is used by many people. Every class race in the city uses that park. So talk about the plans that are on the way for Druid Hill Park.
Well, you know, we've done a couple of things recently, such as the such as the trail, and we put in exercise equipment around the reservoir. And the reservoir loop was closed just about 4 or 5 years ago, and that brought in a whole new bunch of people who can now walk 1.5 miles for exercise around the reservoir. And then we have the Friends group has really grown in the last 2 years, become very strong. So if there's an advocacy group for the park, then the city, you know, if they can find the money, they're more likely to put money into the park because they know somebody's there to support it, to help us. So one of the things we're doing is we have a neighborhood access grant where we are making neighborhoods to the south and the southwest more accessible. You know, it's a 4-lane, 6-lane highway crossing from the neighborhood into Druid Hill. So we're going to be widening the medians and pulling out the sidewalk so it's safer to get across the street, because that's been a major problem for the people in the neighborhoods. They haven't, you know, it's a danger to cross to get into the park. So we're working on that.
That's important.
It's very important. If you live across the street and you're a kid and it's too dangerous to cross.
Right.
I don't know if you've heard of the Three Sisters Ponds.
Oh, sure.
It was, from what I understand, it was a focal point, a destination point in the city in the 1960s.
Right.
And they're kind of towards the back of the park. And we are just completing the plans to restore it. And that's going to be awesome. It's three ponds that are connected to one another, and they'll have stone walls around them and be beautifully landscaped. And they're going to be set up so that you can sit on the wall and to put your feet in the water. It's not going to be fences and, you know, just looking. You're going to be able to be right up there next to the water.
That's great.
And we'll have interactive signage, and the bike trail will go right along there, so it'll be a great destination point
on your
bike. Yeah, it'll be really exciting. And that should be in the next year. We'll have that under construction. We also have, like, stuff, events. We have a weekly event called Ride Around the Reservoir, where we bring out about 20 or 30 bikes every Wednesday from 4 to 7. And these are beach cruisers. They have big seats and high handlebars. So, you know, they're really comfy. And we rent them for $2 a piece. If you don't have $2, you can still ride a bike. But, you know, we're just saying we have helmets, and that has been a great success. People come out, and then they come back with families and friends, and we see people put bikes on layaway after that, once they start riding again after they hadn't ridden for 20 or 30 or 40 years. So there's lots of activities. And the conservatory. If you haven't been to the conservatory, it's
since
beautiful.
It's been redone. It's
amazing. And
so,
it's free.
So who are the Friends of Druid Hill Park?
Well, it's a great mixture, like you said, of the people who use the park. I mean, young, old, black, white, you know, income level varies dramatically. But they meet monthly, and they get 25 to 35 people at every meeting.
And where do they meet?
I think right now they're meeting at the Parks and People office. Uh-huh. They were meeting at the Parks office for a while. And they're the ones who are planning this big celebration. They have all these committees. They have the gala committee and the Saturday committee.
So it launches this fall.
The Friends have been going on for about 3 years now.
No, I mean the celebrations.
Oh, yeah, the celebration. October 16th was the day in 1860, where there was a big park dedication.
Well, we'll have to have some of the folks from Friends of Druid Hill Park back in the fall to really get it kicked off and let people know that it's happening.
They would love that.
And I just want to say that I think that, and before we go, is that the book that you and Eden wrote, Druid Hill Park, Heart of Historic Baltimore, is really an incredible history of that park. You did an amazing job.
Thank you.
And I'm going to encourage everyone to check this book out, and you can link to that book on our website, steinershow.org, and go get your own copy because it's really worth it. If you love the history of this city and your town, this book just really encompasses everything and everything that ever went in that park from beginning to now. So it's a great book to have in your collection as well. Andrew Addy, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Good to see you again.
You too.
You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. On July 11, 1948, a group of black and white and Jewish citizens of Baltimore City walked on to the clay courts, tennis courts in Druid Hill Park. This is a time when Baltimore and America was still segregated, deeply segregated. And a group of people who were associated with the Progressive Party, who were white and black, and black citizens who were part of a tennis club here in Baltimore, went into the white facility to begin a tennis match. They didn't do it on the sly. They told the police they were coming. They told the parks they were coming. They told everyone they were coming. And they were going to make a statement that segregation had to end. Equality had to be the mark of the day. And went in and were arrested. And it was a very important moment in American history and in Baltimore history. Joining us in studio is Mitzi Swan, who was 18 in 1948 and played on those courts on July 11th, 1948, was arrested for her participation and playing that tennis match. Nellie Briscoe Garner joins us by phone. She was a teenager at the time and was in attendance, and in her time was a local tennis star here in our community. We're also joined on the phone by Douglas Bishop, who was a lifeguard at what was known as the Colored Pool in Druid Hill Park. Both the pools and the tennis courts in Druid Hill Park at that time were segregated. So let me welcome Mitzi Swan, Nellie Briscoe Garner, and Douglas Bishop to the show. It's good to have all three of you with us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Many of you may have personal recollections of that moment. Many of you may be the sons and daughters and grandchildren of people who were there at that moment and have some familial memories you want to join us with as well, or just talk about the significance of that situation. So let's talk about what that moment was. And I'll start with Mitzi Swan and then go to Nellie Briscoe Garner. Because you, Mitzi, were at the forefront of that. You and Mary Coffey, who was a year older than you. She was a student at Morgan State University. You were then a sophomore at the University of Maryland, College Park.
That's right.
And tell us about that moment and how this took place and what happened.
I'll start with what happened that day.
Okay.
A man and I went to the tennis permit office to get a permit to play. We went 8 o'clock in the morning, and we had we did get a permit because we were both white. We had to wait until 2 o'clock until the matches actually started. You can imagine the kind of anticipation that would take place. You knew in your heart you were going to be arrested because it was against park policy to have interracial games on the courts or any kind of interracial activities in the park. So we waited till 2 o'clock. And then when we went on the courts, we had the four men on one court, the two black and two white, and on another court were the women, the two black and two white. As soon as the men started to play, to pick up their rackets and get ready to play, the police were there. They were there ahead of time because they knew what was going to take place. And it was a very scary thing, as a matter of fact, because you saw all these police around, and you knew they were waiting to come after you. And also, there were the police vehicles. The Black Mariah was there.
The paddy wagon was called the Black Mariah back in the – I remember that. Even in the 60s, it was called the Black Mariah.
That's right.
Right.
And we saw that there, so we knew what was going to happen. As soon as the men started to pick up the rackets and play – the police came right on the court and told them they were not allowed. And if they played, they were going to be arrested. Well, they picked up their rackets and started to play. And the police again said, you're going to be arrested if you play. And they were arrested. Now, the men sat down on the courts, and they had to be carried off. That was quite a sight to see a policeman carrying these guys off the court. So after they did that, then they came over to where the women were, and they told us the same thing. If you play, you're going to be arrested. And we started to play, and of course we were arrested. But we didn't sit down. We walked off the courts. We just couldn't quite do that. Didn't want to see a cop carrying me off the court.
You were ladies. That wasn't going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, can you figure it? Being carried off. I mean, this is back in 1948. None of these other demonstrations have ever taken place where people were actually arrested doing things
right.
like that. And so we were arrested, and everybody was put in the paddy wagons or police cars, but the three youngest women, it was me and two others, were taken down to the station in a police car. And we were in the judge's chambers, and the others were put in jail.
Nellie Briscoe Garner, tell me about that day for you and where you were that day.
Well, right outside of the conservatory, there's a hill. It's on the left side of the conservatory, if you're standing in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
There was a hill that was just like a stadium. And I was on that hill waiting to play if I got a chance to play. Consequently, I wasn't arrested because my foot was not on a court. I was on
That's nice way of putting it.
I was sitting on the grass. Waiting to play, so, and it was a devastating sight to see all of your friends that you've been knowing, playing with all your life and everything, to see them hauled off like that. It was devastating. That's not all I can say about it, because what could you do? And it's one thing that I want people to realize, that this was not a law. It was Department of Rec's policy not a law. It was their policy that they do this. And like Mitzi said, you needed a permit to play. So after this broke up and we were allowed to play on those courts, we used to stand over there early, 6 o'clock in the morning, waiting for them to open up so that we could get a permit. But no matter when you went, all permits were gone. You never got one.
And Doug Bishop, you weren't there that day, but you were a lifeguard at the what was called the Colored Pool at Jewel Hill Park. Is that right?
Number two.
Right.
That's right.
And what years were you there doing that?
1953 and
1954. I want to kind of step back for a minute. If you could set the tone for a second. I'm just with Nellie and Doug. And what the tone was for you in Baltimore then is young black people in this community, World War II had ended. Black soldiers had gone to war and come back and kind of started the core of young African Americans in that period demanding a seat at the table after the fighting that was done in that war. And many of those young men who came back were from Baltimore. And I was wondering if you could just talk about what the tenor of that time from your perspective, Nellie.
Well, we were so... what's the word I want to use? We were removed from segregation because we had been by ourselves for so long. And then you were thrown into this pot. I said, oh, my goodness. You know, it was like a wake-up call, really a wake-up call for a lot of the black kids at that time that this is really what's going on. You must understand that. You live with your family, you stay in your area, you go to your schools and everything. Segregation at that time didn't bother me a bit because I wasn't concerned with it. I was concerned with learning. And then all of a sudden, bang, it hits you. And that's when you sit back and take notice of what is going on around you. It takes a little while for some of us to wake up. You know, and that's the tenure of the time when this occurred.
And I was thinking about that, Douglas Bishop, because we were in a time in the late 40s and early 50s in Baltimore in America where we were still kind of in the era of extreme violence against black people, where lynchings were not a distant memory, that for people to cross the color line and to stand up was a pretty powerful move and statement.
Yes, it was.
Go ahead, Doug. I'm sorry.
That was Nellie.
Elliot,
I just said yes, it was.
Oh, that was you, Nellie. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So I was just curious about the conversations were taking place at that point. And how did it take place that in that time in 1948 that blacks and whites got together to even cross the line to begin this conversation about going to the tennis courts? How did that start?
I think Mitzi can answer that best.
I was in the Young Progressives, which was the from the the Progressive Party, and that was a third party taking place at that time. With Henry Wallace was running for president, and there was discrimination. And the interesting thing was, in our membership, we had a couple. The husband was Filipino, and she was white, and they used to go to the courts, and they were not allowed to play because his skin was dark, and so we talked about that. And then we also had people in our group who were veterans, and we also had the college students. And we had people that had trouble with jobs because they were black. So we decided to make a statement that this was wrong, and we staged that demonstration. We planned it, and we wanted this thing to be in the forefront of people's consciousness so that they would know what was happening in this country or in Baltimore. And that's what took place. But one thing I want to add, when we were all arrested, it was instantaneous, and I don't know how it happened, but the whole group started to sing My Country, 'Tis of Thee, America. And even now when I think about it, it sort of gets me a little bit choked up because it was such a stirring moment that this was no one planned it. It just happened. And that, to me, made a statement. It's, well, even now I get a little bit choked up when
That's okay.
talk about it.
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
We're talking about what happened 60 years almost to the day, July 11th in 1948, when Baltimoreans, black and white and Jewish, crossed the color line and walked onto the whites-only courts at Juratah Park and became a huge part of that moment and of our history, defying segregation, saying segregation must end, the courts must be integrated, people were arrested. The trial went on for a very long time. There were people there. As I read this history, really came back to me. Some of the names of the past that many people don't even know anymore, people like Duke Avnet, who was a labor lawyer in town, who was a dear friend, actually, of my mother's, and who defended people, Harold Buckman, who was a lawyer who crossed the line, and my friend Lou Pinckney's father, who was there on the courts that day. Lou Pinckney just left us. He was a Vietnam vet, one of my closest friends in life, but his father was there on the court that day. And it was a very powerful moment when citizens in the city stood up and made a very, it was very frightening, a very frightening moment and a very powerful moment for people to kind of almost put their lives and limbs on the line in the heart of segregation here in Baltimore South. Join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, to join in this conversation with two who were there, Mitzi Swan, who was arrested that day, Nellie Briscoe Garner, who was a teenager on the Hill, supporting there, was prepared to be arrested herself, though was not that day, and she became a tennis star here. Doug Bishop is with us. He's a lifeguard at the Color Pool at Juratah Park in the 50s and remained there during the 60s. You can join us here at 410-319-8888. 88. And I wonder when you, and by the way, let me just say there's going to be a reenactment of this, this Friday night at 5 o'clock at the Conservatory in Druid Hill Park. We'd like you all to join us there, and it's going to be a very interesting evening. Many of the people who are on the show today will be there, and you can meet some of the folks who actually were there and made this historic moment part of our life. What do you think this says for the young people today who would be literally your grandchildren at this moment, that who go to our public schools or private schools and have never heard of this moment? Let me start with Nellie Briscoe Garner and go to Mitzi Swan and also then Doug Bishop.
Well, we had a tennis camp at Druid Hill Park. My nephew started a tennis camp out there, David Owens, for quite a while, and every now and then, every year, maybe once a year, we would take all of the kids over to that side, to what was normally called the Negro side, where the tennis courts were. And we would sit down and talk to them and tell them about what happened over here at that time. Because by then, the clay courts were gone. They're not there any longer where their rest was. But we would talk to them every year, and some of them were very wide-eyed about it, and some of them could, as normal, could care less.
Right
now, they can pick up a racket. If they got a racket, they can pick up a racket and go play on any public court, and it doesn't get through to them.
Right.
It really doesn't.
And the reason they can pick up those tickets right now, those rackets and play, is because of what you and Mitzi and others did. Mitzi?
A lot of people just never knew what took place at that time. People today don't, especially if you meet people from New York or other places, they never had that. They never had with the segregation that we had here in Baltimore, because we were sort of like a southern state.
We were a southern state.
And so they were all surprised that this took place, because their schools were integrated and their public facilities were integrated, and they could go to restaurants. And in Baltimore, they couldn't. And Nellie would know better than I would of what would take place if someone of color would try to go in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So this to me was just that is why we did it in the first place.
Doug Bishop, you want to jump in? We haven't heard from you in a bit. And your thoughts on the significance of this for young people who haven't heard about this. But
okay. Well, we had a splash party not too long ago on June the 21st at Druid Hill Park Pool.
Mm-hmm.
This pool was the number one pool, and we had a chance to talk to a lot of the lifeguards and to a lot of people, and we were explaining to them the difference between that pool and the pool that we used to use, and we tried to tell the kids that they have a lot of opportunities now, they should take advantage of them and move forward in their lives because the future looks bright. But we explained to about how the pool was and what it meant to us and this sort of thing. And we just tried to show the difference between the two pools and then what things were back then and what things were now. And we tried to realize that that there have been some improvements, and the kids just have to take advantage of things and move forward.
We're talking with Doug Bishop at this moment, who was a lifeguard at the Colored Pool at Jewel Hill Park. We're joined by Nellie Briscoe Garner, who was a teenager in 1948, became a tennis star, and Mitzi Swan was 18 in 1948. We're talking about the July 11th, 1948, the 60th anniversary coming up of blacks, whites, and Jews who crossed the line at the whites-only courts at Jewel Hill Park and were arrested, began to change the nature of our city with their acts. Join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And let's go to the phones. And Denise in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Denise, good morning.
On my way to work, and I've gone to the dentist, and so I'm usually at work at this time, so I normally don't catch your show, but I happen to have 88.9 on my radio. I'm so glad that I did.
I'm glad you did, too.
Thank you. I'm 31 years old, native of Baltimore, born and raised. Both my parents are from Baltimore. I've never heard about this, and I'm just so thankful that I'm hearing about it today. And thank you to the ladies and gentlemen who, through your acts, just made a stand for all of us. And I'm just very glad that I caught this. This is very informative, and like I said, I've never known. My parents had never shared this with me, that both of them would have been like one or two at the time. But I've
makes
never
me feel
this,
old.
And, I'm sorry?
No, it just makes me feel so old.
No. Please don't think that. But it's just, you're saying that young people need to hear this, and I'm 31, so I'm not that young, but I've never heard of this, and it's really important to hear. I mean, we hear about everything that happened in the 60s for civil rights, but this happened 12 years before 1960, and that's actually great to hear because I had not learned about this, so I have to go to work now. But
all right.
Thank you all for your contributions, and thank you for making this known. I'm going out of town on Friday, so unfortunately I can't attend the event. If I had known earlier, I would have tried to go. But thank you so much for sharing this information.
Thank you so much, Denise.
Have a wonderful day.
You too. And what we're talking about is this Friday night at 5:30 at the Conservatory on Druid Hill Park. There will be a reenactment of that event. And a celebration of that day with many people who were there. You go from 5 to 7 o'clock, 5:30 to 7:30, in Druid Hill Park at the Conservatory. You can join us for this wonderful event and to remember these heroes and the heroes from 1948 who are still with us, thank God. Let me read an email that goes to the point that actually Denise just raised. And our email address, by the way, is steinershow, S-T-E-I-N-E-R, show, at gmail.com. Jessica writes in from Mount Vernon. Hi, Mark and guests. One of the most surprising things about this event is that it happened in the late 40s and not the 60s. What are the guests' thoughts on why a civil rights event like this, which seems to have all the hallmarks of a 60s event, could happen so early in Baltimore? Good question. What do you think, Mitzi?
I don't know. This third party that we were members of, the Progressive Party.
It would remind people, this was an election in 1948. Harry Truman, John Dewey were the main candidates. It was a Dixiecrat party for racists called, with Strom Thurmond was running for president, and another part of a third party called the Progressive
Party.
Yes,
and Henry Wallace was running for president at that time. And his platform was for civil rights, for an end of discrimination. And so that's why I was a part of it, because I believed in his platform. And that's why I participated, because that was part of my life.
You know, what made me think is, and we're almost out of time here, but I wanted to, let me think, when I realized this Progressive Party was so involved in this and made this coalition with the Baltimore Tennis Club, which was the black tennis club in the 1940s and 50s here in Baltimore, that it always takes an enlightened, courageous minority of people who were not in the mainstream. The progressives were not in the mainstream. Black folks clearly were not in the mainstream in 1948 in America to make a change, to stand up and go, this is wrong, it has to change. You know, it's never the folks who stayed in the middle of the establishment. It's always the folks at the edges who change what happens in America, whether it's the abolitionists in the 1840s and 50s, or whether it was Mitzi Swan and Nellie Briscoe Garner and all the others who stepped onto the courts that day and said, enough is enough and it has to end. And I want to say it's a huge honor to have you all on our show today. Mitzi Swan, Nellie Briscoe Garner, Doug Bishop, thank you for being a part of us.
No, thank you, Mark.
Thank you for having
us. Our foremothers, thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This month, Urbanite writers look behind the gritty facade of some of the city's tougher neighborhoods. What they find may surprise you. Urbanite is available at over 800 locations and online at www.urbanitebaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gay Pinder, and Felicia Faison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.